Hi, everyone. My name is Natalie Gochner. I represent the political center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. Shireen Gourbani's on the left.
Hello, and hey, listeners. Hope you're doing well and staying safe in the snow.
And Senator Dan McKay on the right.
Hey, everybody. Good to be back.
We've had a few listeners. A listener with the name Natalie, only spelled N-A-T-A-L-E-E, had a conversation with me recently about the show. So love our listeners.
Yeah, we love our listeners.
Sounds like the Natalies need an official spelling for their demonym.
Yeah, let's get Dan to help us with that. Listen, there's sobering news out there. And I sobering, complex, sometimes frustrating, maybe super exciting. I don't know. But let's start just globally and talk about what's going on. Canada now has hit back at Trump with 25% reciprocal tariffs on steel, aluminum, and other goods. It's got me scratching my head.
Yeah.
And we talked about this already, but what's the end game here, Dan?
This
doesn't end well in my mind.
Well, what I can guess from the length and what the policies are and the way they're playing out is that Trump, and this is fair, the market is hyper-infused with an overprinting of capital, right? Mm-hmm. And you've got a lot of capital. And if you ever want to see interest rates return, return to like five, mm-hmm. sub-five or whatever it might be, to kind of pick up a housing market that is not doing well, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Then you've got to see some of this capital leave the market.
Yeah. Okay, Shireen, this is hardcore economics.
And
Dan, what you saying
Natalie,
there?
I was going to say, Natalie, you could probably boil this down for everybody smarter than I can.
No, I'm following it. But what strikes me, what he's in some ways, correct me if I'm wrong, Dan, but in some ways he's saying, the market's overvalued. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of indications of that.
Yeah.
And somehow it's got to come down to earth.
Yeah.
And Dan's sort of saying, so we're being led there. But I'm like, most people would push that off for someone else's job.
Yep.
And it's just like, the debt, like we know it's a problem, but mm-hmm. nobody faces it. Shireen, anything you want to say more on tariffs or on a president that is deliberately taking us down a path that creates economic harm?
Yeah. So I guess
short term, maybe not.
Okay. So I would say there are a couple pieces of this. And the other part that you mentioned that's interesting, and I think it's translatable, but like making sure that people understand what we're talking about is cooling down the economy in the hopes that people can do more things that ultimately create greater economic stability across mm-hmm. wider swaths mm-hmm. of individuals. So that's things like getting into housing, right? Mm-hmm. Like in particular, owning a home. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing interest rates really too high. So people are either staying in their homes or with these tariffs, which are, again, a tax that Americans pay, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. American businesses pay, that they pass on to Americans who are buying these, items. Those are the taxes that we are paying. These are Trump taxes that are coming down to American people, and they're going to increase the cost of housing.
So we get to watch this real time, everyone, and we'll keep talking about it. Shireen, I'm dying to hear what you think about Chuck Schumer and what he did recently. A lot of people are calling for him to step down.
Yeah, who?
This is this is complicated in the sense that, he doesn't agree with the budget, but he also didn't want to give control to the, people in control during a shutdown.
Yeah. So I can see a side of this argument, which is that if they went into a government shutdown, allowed us to go into a government shutdown over what is, I think, a completely out of control House Republican led continuing resolution to fund the government. OK, mm-hmm. So what that did was basically give carte blanche to the president on these tariffs to do more damage that we're just talking about. Right. Mm-hmm. You can continue to do that damage. Many other really, I think, concerning and I would say out of bounds or out of the norm appropriations were put into this continuing resolution. They got it passed out of the House. It goes over to the Senate. And Chuck Schumer and a number of others.
Fetterman, Durbin, yeah. Angus King.
Yep. They line up to allow this to go forward. To me, this is exactly why we do not see the kind of energy, momentum, or focus among Democrats, because we don't see it reflected in our party. Yeah. I think
Jeffries. This is why I can't run for office, because I can't play these kind of games.
Yeah.
There's so much politics in this.
There is. And, I think what Schumer's dealing with, and you actually saw some of his comments on this issue, he's dealing with a Democrat party that has like below historic approval numbers. I mean, you're seeing a 27% approval number. When the shutdown happened, the last shutdown under, if I remember right, it was during the Biden administration, was we were shut down for a few days. I can't remember how long, so I apologize.
It was minor,
longer than that.
But it was a blip.
Incidental. But you saw that shutdown, and who took the public relations hit? It was the Republicans, right? Mm-hmm. And I think Schumer's looking at a 27% approval rating of the Democrats, their policies, et cetera, and is saying, wait a minute, if we are responsible for shutting down the government and then enable, you know, whatever their worst fears are among their base, they don't know how to get lower than 27%. And well, I think that's the gamble he's playing.
Yeah. And I just have to say the number 27%, I'm pretty sure just a couple points above that are Republicans in Congress as well.
44.
No, for your president. But across the board, people's perceptions of Congress are very low, including Republicans in Congress. That's true. So there is a real argument, I think, here to be made for seeing there, you know, folks on the left saying you're about to see our version of the Tea Party. People who are sick and tired of business as usual because it is not delivering for the American people.
Yeah. OK, so this is interesting. Lots to, you know,
but I do love the politics element of that, because you're right. I mean, there is some behind the scene gamesmanship going on.
Yeah. OK, so I don't know how to, you know, tee up this next conversation, but I'm going to do it this way. And Dan, I'm going to get just a little bit personal. Dan and I are really good friends. We have a good friendship outside of both sides of the aisle. We're often dialoguing together and whatnot. But I have to work at my friendship with Dan.
That's fair.
I'm teasing, Dan. What I mean is, you give me the freedom to speak my mind, which I love, and which means I can say things that you disagree with, and we work through it.
Happens all the
time. Okay, yep. So that's all I'm referring to. But I want to listen.
I'm sure
feeling left out here.
No, I just want you to know, even though Dan and I deeply disagree, I actually think it's fair to say we are friends as well.
Yeah.
Do you claim it?
100%.
For sure. Okay. So Shereen, not that you can be in these text threads, but I texted Dan recently this quote from Peggy Noonan in the Wall Street Journal, where she said the big domestic political lesson of the first quarter of the 21st century is don't go too far. Mm-hmm. She's speaking of overreach, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And on the list that our producer prepares for us to kind of run through on both sides of the aisle, we've got, you know, the drama of a federal judge, you know, putting a restraining order, if I'm saying the terms right, Dan, against
an injunction
against, you know, deporting some individuals that have done horrific crimes, whatever, but not following due process.
Well, right.
And they go ahead and just do it. Mm-hmm. And as if I understand it, they even said, you know, there's written orders and then there's verbal orders, and we're not sure if the verbal orders hold the same weight. I'm like, oh, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And then you've got just one more to lay, well, two more, you know, layoffs, whether it's, you know, at NOAA or other, you know, important places to our country, or deregulation at EPA. Okay, I've said enough, but those are some examples of potential overreach happening in this administration. Who wants to go first on that?
Yeah, I mean, that sounds exactly like what's happening. But I would
it's
also
overreach
say,
from both sides is my point.
Okay, well, fine. But I'll just say that I think what's deeply disturbing about this is that the story that's being sold to the American people is about how we're saving all this money. Mm. And in fact, what we're not seeing is that we're saving all this money, right?
Yeah. So they haven't even defined the mechanism for which it's saved. Dan, you're with me on this, right? I know Shereen is, but like, you do these layoffs, but the money's still appropriated that department, and it's still there.
Right. Yeah.
Where does it go? When does it move?
Well, and really where it comes into is, you know, we talked about the government shutdown beforehand, but really it's debt, right? That we don't end up utilizing, and as a result, unutilized debt. Is the shutdown ready for now? You know, is the debt out? I mean, that's the measuring stick. And when, you know, when you're halfway to hell, you're not really concerned about whether or not it's hot in the car. You just, you know, want to get your destination, I guess. And that's the funny thing to me is when you look at the federal government and, you know, the concerns, I'd say this is exactly what Trump promised he was going to do, was he was going to get in and fix some of these deep state waste issues that, by the way, Joe Biden ran on and Barack Obama ran on.
Yeah.
And
so,
neither did much
so
about.
Dan, at this point, well, I don't know, what are we in? Are we in 60 days? Are we in 90 days? Anyway, we're
January
not too
20th,
far.
Yeah, 60 days. 60 days.
Okay. And so how do you grade this administration at this point? Because I think it's been incredibly reckless.
Yeah.
I'd, even if I was a President Trump supporter, I would call this reckless.
See, I'm not a reckless. I'd say I knew what I was voting for. I was voting for change, right? And I was voting for change in significant ways. And so the fact that there are pain points going through all of this, I'm not surprised. If people are surprised, I would say they just weren't paying attention during the campaign.
Interesting. Yeah.
Because he promised he was going to do all this stuff.
I don't think that people, I genuinely believe, and we're seeing this more and more on the right, people did not believe that Elon Musk, a unelected billionaire, would get appointed to run roughshod over our government.
I wasn't planning on a measles outbreak in Texas and herd immunity being compromised.
Right. And frankly, President Trump did say repeatedly, I'm going to protect your health care. I'm going to make it better than ever. Right. Like, so when we start seeing cuts to Medicaid and Medicare, people are going to feel that pain. The places where we see folks on, you know, in higher enrollments are places.
What grade do you give,
Trump.
Shereen?
This is beyond. It's despicable.
You can't even grade it. Okay,
it's an F minus in my book.
Yeah, for me, it's reckless, and I think there's better ways to do some of the same policy goals.
If you're a professor, what grade do you give that? Is that a W?
You got to take the class again if it's Natalie's class.
Yeah, you got that. Yeah. She wants more Trump. No, I'm just kidding.
She'd like him to be educated.
Yeah, no, I mean, the disappointment to me is that our systems aren't working better, like that we're not collaborating, that we're not, hearing from both sides of the aisle, that we're not understanding that reasonable people come from different perspectives and we work for accommodation.
But this is the problem that we have allowed scope creep with the federal government. When you say reckless, what I will say is we have a federal government with massive scope creep. Okay. Mm-hmm. When you look at the Constitution and its original intents, you have massive scope creep, Department of Ed, et cetera. And the only thing I'll say about that is while it may feel like, you know, things aren't as smooth, you have a federal government that is way outside of its bounds. And every time the federal government does something, its impacts across the country are much more broad than if we block granted or had some of these things going to the states to deal with them specifically and surgically rather than the alternative.
I just love the idea that you think block grants are going to be specific and surgical, which I just had recommended last week and will recommend again, the book Poverty by America by Matthew Desmond, in which he talks about really the percentage of dollars when they do come down to the states. States find ways, especially Republican states, frankly, to siphon off a huge amount of those dollars to come right back into the state system. So the ability to get people's support that they need and to get it to them efficiently is something I think we would both be interested in. But making sure that those dollars are actually getting in the hands of folks that need it is critical. And we don't see that very often.
Let's take a brief break and then I'm going to have more to say.
Yes.
Stay with
okay.
us, everyone.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. That's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Shereen Gourbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. And we are talking about a lot of issues. And I said, I'll have my voice, you know, in the next segment. I just want to say that I'm just praying for something better to come out of this country, to come out of our political institutions, to come out of our families and homes. And what I'm seeing right now is a lot of finger pointing, a lot of scorched earth, a lot of, you know, sort of provocative battles between factions.
Well,
I think what we have way too many problems to be dealing in that immature space.
Yeah. I your words echo the French representative, and I cannot remember the French member of parliament who made the Statue of Liberty comments just, you know, this last week.
And, okay, I didn't see these, but it sounds like I would like them.
I think they would.
The French comment was,
you know, feels like we should take back the Statue of Liberty,
gotcha.
Right? Because, like, America's
not being friendly anymore.
That group
not being,
anymore. And then the press secretary of the Washington, D.C., you know, Trump's press secretary had some words, and it's been back and forth. But he put out a message on Twitter that I thought actually was very heartfelt. And, you know, was a political statement, certainly, but just to the effect of, you know, we have bigger problems and we could work together. Let's find ways to work together. And that was kind of his comment was like, you know, maybe my words weren't the best, but I could be better.
Here's a way of thinking about it. I want to be a leader, a great leader. And I've spent my career trying to learn from great leaders. And, you know, I work in the David Eccles School of Business. We teach leadership and management and entrepreneurship and finance. I mean, all these things. But what we teach in leadership is not what I see happening right now. And they are best practices. They are backed by, you know, what we've seen in companies and human performance and whatnot. And we just got to get to a better place. Hmm. So a case in point would be, let's talk Sundance, Dan. The Sundance Film Festival. Dan and I went at each other a little bit this week because...
you have to know, when Natalie's disappointing you, it's like the nicest disappointment you've ever felt in your life. It's like instead of like bricks being thrown at you, it's like a pillow, you know? So I mean that nicest way, but there's
Shireen,
really bricks inside.
I want to hear your voice on this, but the real snapshot of it is I had been on a call with people that were helping to make the last case for Sundance Film Festival to remain in Utah as an important cultural addition to our fabric here. Not that everyone agrees with everything that happens at Sundance. And at the same time, Dan put out a provocative tweet about, you know, they're not Utah, so long. And so I sort of went with Dan. And Dan, here's what I want. I want the governor to veto this bill. I want him to veto.
And we should be clear.
That's House Bill 77.
Which bans schools and government institutions from flying pride flags.
Yeah. And the reason I want him to ban it is I think there's a better way. And
To veto it.
Yeah. And all I want the governor to do is say, let's take a pause. Let's get in a room and let's talk about why different people feel differently on this issue. I realize that happened in the session, but that's a political body. I want him to pull in Gen Z, Gen X, you know, the faith community, a diversity of people, and have a conversation. This is exactly what Larry H. Miller did when he pulled Brokeback Mountain from his theaters. Yeah. You probably weren't living here, Shireen.
No, but I remember this well.
Do you remember?
I think I was.
Mm-hmm. I do.
Here.
Tell our listeners.
Well, just that, you know, for those of you that don't remember what Brokeback Mountain was, but it was, you know, it was a theme where cowboys, you know, I didn't see the movie.
Oh, a beautiful love story.
It was actually a beautiful love story.
Two gay cowboys. Or
and Larry pulled it from his theaters.
Yeah.
And then he went and met with a group of students.
Right.
And his heart was opened.
Yeah.
And he apologized.
Yeah.
And he had empathy. And he got to a better place. I heard him talk about it personally. Anyway, that's... Disagreeing
did he
better
back in the theaters though.
I believe he did. I wanted
remember.
To reach the
yeah,
research
anyways,
that, yeah. but my point is that there's an opportunity here for this red state to do something important that helps make marginalized populations feel more included, that preserves a valuable cultural asset in the Sundance Film Festival, and that also preserves some jobs for our state.
So I really value what you're saying, Natalie, and I have to tell you. I don't think it's going to help because how many times, I mean, Governor Cox, as I frequently remind listeners, is the person who marched down to the city county building where he has now said you can't fly a pride, has not yet said, has an opportunity to veto, but has not yet done that. Stopping our city hall, Salt Lake City Hall, from flying a pride flag. He went down there and gave a big speech after a gunman entered a gay nightclub in Florida and killed a number of people. Right. So the same person who did that is now thinking about whether or not he's going to sign this bill. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
The same person who, and this is frankly, we saw this a lot across a lot of Republican legislators. After George Floyd was murdered, a lot of people said, yeah, we got a real problem.
Yeah.
We are far from that moment now. And I just don't believe that if you're not willing to live by your values in the long run, that I want to hear another conversation about
Interesting.
It. Interesting. Show me who
you are. My end game here would be, I just want to pause. We might pass the same bill again, but I want to do it in a different way, in a different spirit. And reasonable people could conclude that you only want one flag flying at your public institutions. And that flag is the flag that unifies us.
Well, and I'd say...
Meaning the state flag and your city flag, and that's it. And I get that perspective. I just want to do it in a way that doesn't hurt people.
Yeah. My gut says there isn't a way to do that because there are political feelings involved in those flags, in all of them, right? Mm-hmm. The Make America Great flag, a Great Again flag, it is not necessarily a political party. Mm-hmm. You know, Ronald Reagan ran on the same ticket, and there are several others before him that used this Make America Great Again. Now, granted, you know, our generation remembers that it's a Trump deal, right? Mm-hmm. But I would never think that it would be appropriate to fly that at the state capitol.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't feel like, I feel like that's the majority imposing its will.
Yeah.
The problem is if if we veto the bill, slow down, have a bunch of conversations about it, and then pass a bill again, it's just double the hurt again because the political tenure, the political memory of people to have the issue, if we wait a year, will have been forgotten and then we'll be punching again. And at the end of the day, I agree with you. maybe the conversation should be centered around what should we be flying and how should we be doing it. Mm-hmm. But certainly there's a lot of politicization in all of it. And it'd be better if we just left that out of our government buildings, period.
I just think if people are going to be anti-LGBTQ, if we're going to be anti-trans, if we're going to ban diversity, then just show me your colors. Mm-hmm. Show me who you are. Yeah. And I understand it now.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is I could support the bill, but I want to support it under unity, that we're flying under one flag. And I want to have listened and you know, express some of my other thoughts.
Yeah, hey, I understand that.
I'm torn which one to go to, but let's go to Governor Cox again and what he did this week with the Washington Examiner, where he published an opinion editorial basically saying it's time to dismantle the Department of Education. I don't know if y'all read it. The content of it makes a lot of sense. He gets that education's primarily, you know, provided at the local level and that, you know, we don't need Washington doing a lot of things in education. But the placement of it in the Washington Examiner blew me away. Shereen, Dan?
So for those that don't get the inside game, please explain why the Washington Examiner is such an interesting place.
It's just from my time in D.C. I remembered we had the Post, we had the Examiner, and the Examiner was, you know, if you had like some real conservative thing you wanted to put out there, you'd put it there because it has a conservative readership. And what business, you know, you might ask, does our governor have placing things like that there rather than in our local paper for the people that he represents? Mm. So why it spoke volumes to me is he's making a national play.
Yeah, I think that's right. So about 11% of our education funding comes from the federal government. Many of those programs go to support our Title I schools where poor kids in our state go to school. It's additional resources that often come in for English language learners, for breakfast and lunch programs to make sure that our hungry kids get fed.
National standards for student aid. For FAFSA, for applying for aid.
Standardized support for deaf and blind. Right. Like these are critical issues that I think it's asking states a lot, especially states that are deeply underfunded in education.
See, Dan, this is a point with leadership where I'd go in and I'd say to my Secretary of Education, we need to optimize the department. And I'm going to give you 90 days to work through that. I'm going to give you 6 months and in a really thoughtful way, come up with a very carefully, you know, thought through. And instead, it's the chainsaw.
Well, in D.C., the best way to get anything to change is to take a chainsaw to it and watch it grow back.
Because
that's what happens.
At least that's
been my perspective over 20 plus years.
I just have to ask listeners if they would really trust our legislature, our governor, to take those federal dollars down to the state level when we see again and again that at the state level, they're trying to do everything they can to move those education dollars around. And in fact, took 120 million of that and put it into private education. Yeah. Like, is this somebody you trust with these dollars?
I'm in agreement with the governor on much of the policy. I thought the play was interesting. And I also think there's a better way to refine, you know, to improve. Hey, you two both also see that Lieutenant Governor Henderson took a strong stance about President Trump or the White House pulling the women's names off the Arlington Graves list. She did a nice thread on Twitter about this, and I thought it was exceptional. I think she's amazing.
Yeah, she shows courage.
Yeah. Dan, did you read it or see it?
Yeah, I saw her post and read it. I liked it. I'll just say I'll break from the administration on this. I think it's weird. I don't get it.
I know.
And that's why I left myself as a head scratcher. Like, I don't get it. What's the end goal here? I think there's people ought to be able to find the people that they relate to or they associate with that have fought for our country and died.
Gave more than half the public the right to vote.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm super sensitive to that.
Yeah.
I've come from a majority that has been discriminated against through much of our history.
Yeah.
Okay, let's close out the program just by talking about Mia Love. Wow, that piece that she put in the Deseret News, I loved it. I thought it was so artfully written. Her battle with brain cancer is coming to an end, and she's spoken about it. Thoughts?
Well, I love it just because it shows kind of an inner, you know, I think it's an inner thing with Mia that she is always thinking about what's next. What's the next generation? Mm-hmm. I mean, she's always been that person anyway.
Yeah.
And it's just great for people to see her the way I have.
I love, Shereen, that it was a living wish and not a dying wish.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really,
I think it was artful.
Skillfully done.
Beautiful. And grateful for, you know, I think in this time when we're deeply absent of, I would say, grit and grace in our leadership together, I thought it was beautifully written.
Yeah. I want a quote from a segment, but do either of you have a memory with Mia?
Well, I've just known Mia for so long. I mean, I remember when she was first running for the city council in Saratoga Springs and got to know her that way. And
impressive, right?
And, yeah, it was impressive, smart, was, you know, hardworking. And I was part of the group that when it was that when there was an opening, you know, for the 4th congressional seat, recruiting me at a run.
Yeah.
I remember when she broke with Trump, especially around his comments around, I don't think we can even say the word on public radio, but she stood up and I thought that was important.
She said, "My living wish and fervent prayer for you and for this nation is that the America I have known is the America you fight to preserve and that each citizen and every leader will do their part to ensure that the America we know will be the America our grandchildren and great-grandchildren will inherit."
That's beautiful.
Love it. All right. Hey, that's a wrap. Thanks, everybody. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. Programs produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks for listening.